but it's a pleasure working with him. As part of an outreach initiative through our respective offices, a brochure on veteran services was developed. In addition, based on input from a number of parties, the State Office for the Aging made a change in its reporting system several years ago to include specific veterans information. It is the result of that change which allows me today to provide you with the most up-to-date information on veterans being served within the aging network. For the first half of the 1995-96 state fiscal year, 39,307 veterans were served under federal Title III funding. Title III funding is, again, the programs which pretty much deal with the senior centers, nutrition programs, the core support services that the federal government requires us to conduct. That number represents 13.4% of the 293,332 New Yorkers served under Title III funding during that same period. And again, it's pretty much a half-year period, so under Title III alone, we're dealing with about 600,000 annually statewide, of which about 80,000 will be under the current year veterans. In addition, a number of veterans were also served by three of the largest state-funded programs. This would be on top of the 80,000 or so estimate for Title III federal funding. And those programs are the Community Services for the Elderly program, again a core support program the state alone funds, the Expanded In-Home Services for the Elderly program, and the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program called SNAP. Again, these are all acronyms. We have CSE is Community Services for the Elderly. ISEP is the acronym for Expanded In-Home Services for the Elderly Program, and Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program is SNAP. I love these acronyms. I think we have about 500 in the aging network ourselves. I'm sure the veterans have their share of them too. Through September 30th, 1995, there have been 6,688 veterans who have been served through CSE. Services available under the Community Services for the Elderly Program include transportation, shopping assistance, homemaker, house corporate, chore services, adult daycare, counseling services, escort and other services necessary to maximize the person's independence. And that's one of the key things the New York State Office for the Aging is there for. We're there to help maintain our older residents' independence for as long as possible. During that same period, 6 months during the current fiscal year, 1,125 veterans received services under ISEP. The overall goal of this program is to improve access to and the availability of appropriate, cost-effective, non-medical support services for non-Medicaid elderly who are functionally impaired. Under SNAP, 1,949 veterans were provided home-delivered meals and related nutritional services. In many cases, these home-delivered meals are the key to maintaining independence, allowing an older person to remain in their community and eliminating, or at least delaying, the need for more costly institutional care. In closing, I will address two other issues the council asked me to discuss in their letter of invitation. First, I have no position on a proposal to create a New York State Veterans Health Care Authority. The major emphasis of the State Office for the Aging, as I noted earlier, is to provide a comprehensive package of non-medical services to the elderly to help prevent them from getting to the stage where they may need, you know, higher levels and more costly levels of care. I'll leave that comment to those of people who come before me and who will maybe follow. Lastly, I will comment on the issue of services provided to veterans at state veterans homes. Before that, I must commend Governor Pataki for his proposal to expand the number of state veterans homes by constructing the new facility in Montrose that has been mentioned earlier. We have every reason to believe that the quality and quantity of services provided will be in the best interest of the veterans residing at the home, just as they are at any other facility. As for privately owned facilities, they are operating under the same standards of quality as established through the Department of Health and its regulations. We at the State Office for the Aging have an outstanding relationship with the Department of Health personnel who monitor nursing homes. We work together with them through our long-term care ombudsman program to try and ensure that the customer side of a nursing home facility care is watched after, in addition to the medical side. So our ombudsmen, they're there to watch out for, you know, nursing home residents, whether it be veterans or others, to ensure the quality of care and the happiness of the resident is maintained. That program is in good shape right now as far as size and length, and is expanding at this point, thanks to the use of volunteers many of whom are, of course, veterans who are volunteering to be trained and to go into nursing homes and such to monitor the care there. It's not something that we want to say in a study or something that's new and found, but believe it or not, there were studies conducted. And believe it or not, today's elderly would prefer to age in place in their own communities. I cannot believe that money was spent on a study like that, but it tells the obvious. They want to remain in their own homes, in their own communities for as long as possible. And that's something that State Office for the Aging is there to try to promote, to advance, to make sure that the vehicles are there for us to maintain as many of our elderly within their own communities and their own homes for as long as possible. To us, our way of thinking, that's the best thing for the elderly, veterans and others, best thing for their families, and by and large, by giving them support. It's the best thing for the taxpayers, because in the end, it does cost taxpayers a lot less to take care of somebody who is in need when they're at their own home than it is to, if they need to go to a level of care where the facility is going to be required as opposed to doing it in their own home. So that's our goal, try and work with various partners throughout the state, in government and out of government, to maintain our elderly's independence for as long as possible. And thereby, everybody becomes a winner. And that's what we look forward to working with this council on as well, and we're trying to reach some of your goals. I thank you very much, and look forward to any questions you may have. I can answer any for you.
Bill?
I want that. Let me start out with a quick question. On page 2, you say that you served 39,307 veterans in the first half of fiscal 96, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet I look on page 3 and you throw out some other numbers, which I think roughly add up to about 9,000.
Right.
So my question is this. The 39,000 veterans that you served, are these 39,000 individual veterans, or are
yes.
these 39,000 contacts?
That's an unduplicated counts. That's why it's so tough. You know, we're trying to segregate out the service unit from all of our services, and the veterans is now a separate item for that. I might add that in the previous fiscal year, that the grand total of between Title III programs, which is the main federal program, as well as the other state programs, the grand total was about 138,000 veterans individually served during the course. And that's out of about 500,000 total veterans in the 65 and over population group, I believe. We serve 60 and over, and that's mostly what our counts would include.
Okay. And then just taking all of your data collection a step further, and I think you're the first agency we've heard from today that is actually collect the data that separates veterans out from the general population, and we appreciate that. So let me get a little pushy.
Okay.
And go to the next step. Basically, over the last several years, from prior management and current and past staff, are you finding any differences in the needs of this veteran population from the general population that you serve?
Data on that.
It could I'll go further and say even anecdotal information, a sense that people have that might cause you to say, you know, here's something, we don't know if it's true or not, but we ought to take a look at it.
If you've got anything you're looking for, maybe I can delve into that. What we really do, we look at veterans, and we do determine if they're veterans early on through our screening process. We work with local, our local offices for aging, who are our front line, work with local veteran service agencies to provide services and overlaps.
One of the things that I'm hearing goes to the fact that combat veterans seem to die at a younger age. If they survive combat, they die at a younger age than the general male population.
Mm.
The second thing that we're finding, this is particularly true in the Korean and the World War II veterans group, is that we never knowingly exhibited post-traumatic stress syndrome behaviors following our service. But what's happening now is if our spouses die, and they're generally the female spouse, the spouse generally is female, all of a sudden, at an older age, we are now beginning to exhibit that post-traumatic behavior.
Hmm.
And I don't think anybody really has good information on it other than we know it's happening. We don't know to what extent it's happening or why it's happening, you know, or at least I don't, maybe others do. But that would lead me to believe that there may be some needs that are very distinct and separate for the aging veteran that we have not taken a look at.
And that's one, you see, the problem there too is, like you're saying, it's something that's unique to the veteran population because of the fact that they're going through a combat situation and everything related to that. I have family who've been through that situation from the Gulf War back to World War II, so I know what you're talking about. It's something that we, our aging network throughout the state, whatever the senior citizen is, veteran or non-veteran, family member, veteran or just a regular senior citizen that wasn't a veteran and nobody ever in the family ever did anything in the line of military, we look at individuals, case manage if there's a need for some care that we can provide to help maintain the people in their own homes, in their own communities for as long as possible. That's pretty much it, because we have so many volunteers, many of them, thousands of veterans who work with our aging network throughout the state, providing services at senior centers and also for in-home services, visiting and so forth. I haven't got any stats that I got on my fingertips right now. I probably would talk to John Behan and see if he's got something on his angle, but I do have a staff, which is a policy unit and some others who are well-versed in trying to dig up information like that. If you haven't got access to something, I'd be happy to have my staff to take a look at what you might be looking for. And I'll leave you my card, and you can give me a call, and we can get together on that one. Okay.
Rick?
Very, I'm sorry. I have just one request, Mr. Hofer, is that you mentioned 138,000 folks were veterans were served last year, but obviously there are more programs than those you've elucidated.
Right.
Here.
The detail for the speech was more limited to certain title programs to kind of give it a little individual look. We do have listings of, because there are some, we try to avoid duplication in our counts, and our final bottom line counts are the ones that we really look at most. I might tell you, you know, like you'd have 100,000 served here and 50,000 there, that's more than 138,000 because of duplication in counts and services. We wipe out those duplications when we do our grand total summaries for the year on services. So for instance, on a statewide basis, we serve over 600,000 individual senior citizens in New York State out of a population of about 3.2 million.
Right.
So veterans, again, like I said, I know for sure on the Title III, there are 39,307 exact count in the first 6 months of the last fiscal year that we served who were veterans individually, not duplicated counts in Title III. Many of those veterans have gotten services from other programs, including the state-run programs, such as ISIP. But individually looking at these different service areas kind of, you know, gives you an idea of a lot of small numbers and sometimes a big number adding up to an impressive number of people who are being served by our aging network.
Would it be possible to send us the overview roll-up of the veterans that are serviced by various programs within your agency, delineating which programs to President DeMarco at your convenience?
I have two of my members of my staff up there. They got it. Good. They're on the ball.
Thank you very much. And I just want to say on a personal note, in the discussions with your office and doing some legwork on behalf of President DeMarco, found out that your daughter was terribly, terribly ill, but is on the mend, and my heart is with you, my friend, and thank you so much for your interest in being here with us today.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much.
Pete? I think Rick almost touched on my first question about the list of programs that you will provide for the agent. That's what I want to know about, too. Also, do you have any limitations on the service that you provide due to incomes for the aging?
Okay. On the last question first, and I'll have to ask you to remind me about the first question.
Okay.
As far as income is concerned, our programs are not entitlements. Our programs for ages have been programs that we can provide on a capitated basis, funding, you know, to local governments, and it's up to them to provide whatever amount of service as much as they can. We do have for instance, our meal programs, a voluntary contribution for receiving a meal. We do suggest to the seniors who participate in those that if they want to, the cost of the meal, including overhead and everything else, might be $6. But if you want to donate $3 or $2 and guests are $3, it varies according to area. So again, there's no requirement for a contribution there. No embarrassment is made to the seniors who participate there. Under the expanded in-home services for the elderly program, that one does have a sliding scale attached to it. But again, that does not kick in until you're to the person who needs the service. It reaches 150% of poverty level. At that point, the sliding scale is implemented for the cost of the service, and would go to 100% of the cost of the service at the 250% poverty level, which pretty much is close to $20,000 for an individual at this point in New York State. So again, there it's pretty generous, and then case management in any case, even if they're paying for it, is no charge for that. Case management, we find, is one of the key parts of maintaining the cost effectiveness of the services we provide to seniors in New York State. So again, like I said, there's no real cost. Some things is suggested contributions, perhaps sliding scale for some services. Most of our, we take in about $25 or $30 million a year just from what seniors get back and the services that they receive by cash contributions out of a $300 million total state and local and federal spending.
We have one more question here from Mr. Gary.
Yeah, is there a special or any particular concentrated effort in projecting out into the future as the population ages up? As far as your agency and staffing and being prepared to handle that aging up?
Okay, I'll answer that one two ways. One, we have projections based on Census Bureau numbers that the New York State, the population of people 60 and over will go from 3.2 million in 1990 to about 4.1 million plus in the year 2010. It's about a million or a 30% growth during a period of 20 years. That is faster than any other age cohort in population. And certainly the state and across nationally, that's part of the trend. In particular, the biggest growth areas are in people who are over 85 and we're going to have a lot more people in their 90s and 100s coming along. And it presents another challenge too. You're going to have senior citizens, which I'm facing now with my cousins in Florida, who are seniors, and then their aunt, my aunt, their mother is going to be 90 years old. They're all three of them on Social Security now. The one cousin's a veteran from the Korean War. So it presents all kinds of problems that way. I think that what the aging network offers, again, our key is not, we're not the big bucks things with Medicaid and a lot of things which spend billions of dollars because they have high-end cost programs. There's a need for those, but we've been concentrating on low-cost alternatives, non-medical, trying to maintain people in their own homes. Strengthening that, in order to strengthen it, we have a couple of things we're doing. One is we're going to computerize our network as far as case management, assessment of a particular client's needs. Right now, we're still doing a lot of things on a paper clipboard kind of a thing. A lot of times you have a client out in the field who you have to go out and see and go back to the office back and forth. Well, we're going to have laptops. That'll be the next stage of it. I'm looking forward to having laptops for everybody out in the field so they can see maybe 5 or 10 people instead of 2 or 3 and be able to case manage. Because the sooner you get somebody's case managed properly, the better you can start getting services to and go on to the next person. So that's one of the things we're doing. The other thing is to try and reach out to the, there's a vast interest out in the private sector and also nonprofit groups in helping in various ways. Certainly, I know senior citizens are the cornerstone and backbone of a lot of voluntary actions that go on. They participate in their own age group with nursing homes as volunteers as well as in senior programs. They also help out with kids, foster grandparents and so forth. So, but the corporate end of it, we're also going to try to expand on that. Give you an idea, New York City just had its entire Meals on Wheels waiting list wiped out by Philip Morris with one grant because they had an interest in it. So again, there's a lot of, with the senior citizens being a broad-based market, again, they, as we all know, people who are getting, as any age group that has a certain attribute in business, there are business people who want to make sure they make some points for them, and if it could be done tastefully to help constituency, much as my colleague Bernadette Castro has done with the Parks Department, try and bring in some public-private dollars. Certainly, New York State have been encouraging growth of that notion that already exists to a great degree, but we're going to try and push that side of it. The big goal there would be to try to make sure that if we can keep more of our seniors where they'd rather be, which is home, a little bit healthier, a little bit happier, keep more of them from perhaps going to a nursing facility or someplace else because of lack of knowledge of community support that a family may have and may let somebody go because they didn't know some things were available in their own backyard. If we can keep some of that from happening, that'll help ease the pressure on some of the higher cost or alternatives like nursing homes perhaps or other things, which by again are very necessary to have those high quality and high care facilities. I'm not knocking those at all. They're very essential. We have the best, really, I believe, in New York State. But eventually, it does cost an awful lot of money. We try to, I think we can deal with our growing population if we're smart about how we do things and not let anybody be underserved. We would do the best we can for them. But certainly to waste money by giving them more than they need is certainly not something that the state government can do during the next 15 years.
I'll cut it short. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I talk too much? On behalf of the council, I want to thank you. And Godspeed for your daughter.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you very much.
Next, we have Mr. Robert Mitchell of the American Legion, Department of New York, the Rehab Committee. Mr. Mitchell. The council welcomes you, sir.
Good afternoon. I've got a few handouts here that I can give you. Commander Ted Coleman, the department commander, couldn't be here this evening, this afternoon, and neither could the John Sampson, the rehab chairman. I'm not actually on the rehab committee, but I've been delegated this afternoon to speak on their behalf. They've sent me a lot of literature to give you on the national basis. They didn't send me anything to explain on state issues of the health plan. I want to forego a lot of this reading and let you digest it. I'm going to submit to you the American Indian's national resolution that was voted upon, resolution 141, in September at the National Convention in Indianapolis, Indiana. And also, I'm going to submit to you the Veterans Healthcare Security Act, the American legislative proposal. What they've done here, the section establishes a new chapter 18 in the health security system, Title 38, United States Code. And a copy of the American Legion's Veterans Health Security Plan in its entirety. I don't think I brought enough copies for everyone here, but if anyone can get a hold of me or call Dick Pedro at the department level, be glad to send you these, or call me and I'll be able to send you one. I don't know if I can answer any particular questions.
Bob, you could take your time at one of our meetings. You could bring them in.
Right.
You don't have to rush.
Okay.
You can bring them in nice and easy when you find your time.
Sure.
Go ahead. As one of the folks who President DeMarco delegated to put together the reports that really are going to be printed here shortly, both of them we anticipate within the coming weeks, would it be acceptable, Bob, to the Legion if we print the, include the resolution and the draft of the Veterans Health Security Act, Health Care Security Act, and not all the handouts, because the handouts are really thick, and so to reprint all of those in that particular format would, we'd need three men and a boy and a mule to carry around the report by the time we get it published.
Sure.
Is that all right?
Yeah,
just those two elements?
I think that'd be principled. The other thing that Ted Coleman has told me, that I know that the American Legion is not part of this council, but supports this council in their efforts to the health care system for the veterans, especially in the New York State.
Thank you. Let the record show that the VFW will submit its resolutions on veterans' health care, and they will be ready at our next meeting.
Just one thing I'd like to bring up, it's a little separate from this, is that Rick Weidman addressed to the state about their cooperation and their counselors with the local social services. I like to say in Saratoga County, which I am the director of, We established in 1989 a referral system with the Department of Labor, with the Social Services Department of the county, with the Medicaid program, with the nursing homes, employment and training, Division of Youth, and also the Office of the Aging and the HEAP program. So any one of those entities that go to the county, they all get referred to me before any of those benefits are handed out. Now that my office has moved, Saratoga County has built a $4 million social services building, and I am now located in the heart of Saratoga Springs, but I am now in Ballston Spa at the county seat in that building. And I can tell you that my business has gone up, since I've been there November 1st, probably 25% has gone up drastically in that respect, especially when it comes to Medicaid recipients and the welfare recipients that are either veterans or they are widows of veterans or even dependent children, all come to me and with the referral, and I refer back to them before the benefits are administered to them.
Thank you. Our next gentleman is Mr. George Weinstein of the Jewish War Vets, the National Housing Chairman. Please go down.
No.
No, they're not mine. I don't wear them. They're too small.
Okay. I was just thinking.
Can't go to the bathroom, huh?
My name, as he said, is George Weinstein. In addition to being the National Housing Chair, I've been its legislative chair for the last two decades for the state of New York. And I've also been chairman of the Veterans Advisory Board of the County of Westchester, where we had developed the concept of Montrose in 1985 and actually sat down with the Department of Civil Engineering and with the New York State and also with the New York State Department of Health and Human Services on that. And out of that came the idea that I sat 3 years ago with Ron Tochi on long-term health care and a health authority. I was afraid to expand the health authority as we're directing now to include all health services. I still feel it should be a two-step affair, because I think just doing the health authority for just the nursing homes is going to be difficult enough. Once that is working and working good, and I think it's the only way to go, and I'll give you an indication why from my background, then it would be easy to bring in the health authority, because a lot of it is going to come from the federal government, you see. Because the federal government is heading in the same direction. Jesse Brown is already discussing this. My background is, I'm not an expert on VA health services other than the usual volunteering at a VA center or through the different committees I've served here, up here for 20 years on legislation. I am a retired principal engineer of the Grumman Aircraft, 44 years, serving as both a project engineer and program manager. My specialty in the technical area was life cycle cost. And when I took a look in 1985 and started getting educated by Don Brown, who I know personally, and others up here, and John Behan, who I know from Long Island before he came up here, from my professional background, I started to see that with five nursing homes, which should be under one hat, not one under Stony Brook and the others, and I'll explain why, that's a operation in which the cost for expending that care from wherever the funding comes from is between $1.25 and $1.5 billion a year. And that is much too big for the Department of Health or Department of Veterans Services. My original idea, which I had worked out with some of you in the different veterans organizations, after I spoke to Ron Tochi, because he's from my district, was that the Director of Veterans Services and the Department of Health would have a say on one or two people through the governor to be on the commission that runs it. That the Senate and the Assembly each provide three, approximately, on that management committee. The Senate and the Assembly would be based on recommendation of the veterans organizations, and I was positive, and I got that assurances when I made the recommendation before I went forth, that none of us, I know my organization positively won't, and I know the Legion, VFW, none of you will recommend anybody to be on that management committee unless they're intimately qualified. Not that they're a veteran and they're a part of the inner circle and so forth, and I think I can speak on here, there's not too many here on that. See, what has happened, when I originally made that recommendation 3 years ago, and you people have expanded it, and I support that, you saw Don Brown sit here, and he brought in the things of one of the partial reasons for having the health authority, like the power authority, same reason, because you can computerize all the services, you have one management flow, you have one series. You don't have the problem now where I spoke to some volunteers from the Legion and from the JWV at St. Albans and at Stony Brook, where they complained that Stony Brook pays a higher salary and has higher skilled people than St. Albans Nursing Home. Why? And both have higher than Oxford, and the regulations are different, regardless of what they say. And that shouldn't be. And last year, when we came up here and all the veterans met together, I think it was the middle of March, there were about 250 of us there. And what happened was we all spoke, and we complained bitterly about Stony Brook, the fact that they had got so much money and only 20% of the facilities were open, yet they were fully staffed. And now, all of a sudden, they're talking about 80% staff, they're doing it incrementally the way I did as a manager, the way many of you did it, regardless of what capacity you were in whatever field you are. So, as far as the health authority, what I've gotten privately from the regional director of the VA when I had supper with him, and with the others, they like it. Because remember, one of the federal regulations for a state veterans nursing home, effective a couple years ago, was that it must be built either adjoining a VAMC or on the grounds of a VAMC. It raises a question in Stony Brook, because the word I have from Stony Brook and from Fort Hamilton is they're going to shut down. Fort Hamilton has two floors completely locked and closed because they don't have enough patients. Stony Brook has under 350 beds occupied. Montrose is at almost full capacity. Kingsbridge is almost full capacity. 23rd Street just doubled their size, they're at full capacity again. I don't know what would all be the others. So some of these hospitals of 350 beds or less may be in for a problem, you see. Now how that affects the St. Albans Nursing Home, I don't know. Probably can exist because they can operate under the control of Northport, which is not too far away. Yeah, Brooklyn may not have. But anyways, what I'm saying is we have a number of things to do. People have spoken about what we should be doing. I also personally feel from my professional background that a properly operating with the kind of overview we as veteran organization leaders do, would provide the health authority with the VISN, V-I-S-N, would be a beautiful match because it would take care of some of the problems, like in Westchester. I didn't want to criticize social services, but in Westchester, we found a $3 million area where they were paying for veterans' benefit services that were completely covered by veterans' benefits, and they never applied for them because they never asked them if they were veterans. And those that they did ask, the paper was lost, you see. And when that happens, it's more than just the state paying money out. They're not going to get the same services. They're not going to get the same services, which is why each one of these have asked the questions. Now, we talk about One other one, then I'll wrap up. In the discussion with the four directors of the four hospitals in the metropolitan New York and New Jersey area, one of the questions I asked here, which apparently they had been briefed ahead of time, can I go up my card in any VA hospital in the country? No. I have a card from Kingsbridge. If I use it in Montrose, all they can verify is that the card, they got it at Kingsbridge. They can't verify it as me. They have no medical records, and I got to fill out records again. What they did is what we recommended them that night. Set up an internet and start, because that's going to help the services, because what a lot of us fail to realize is, forget my age, forget some of your age, Mr. DeMarco. Vietnam veterans, the average age is mid-50s now.
But the mean average age will be 50 this spring.
Yeah.
I'm and right dead in the middle of the mean.
Yeah.
The first time in my life I'm not on the fringe.
Not that bad. But that raises additional problems. Like, for instance, they raised the problem here in the questions about 500 nursing beds required in Westchester, and that was a reason. But what the study did not do is check how many veterans have completely filled the private nursing homes, because there was no state veterans nursing home there. Now, in Westchester, where I come from, we did that study. Every single nursing home, the capacity of the veterans and their spouses is 80%. They're completely filled with veterans. So there's another aspect, and plus the fact, when a veteran goes into a private or a state nursing home, which isn't a veteran's nursing home, a community nursing home, or a hospital nursing home, they get about a third of the money. And the nursing home gets a third of the money that that the state veterans home gets, because we as veterans go into a state veterans home. Because two-thirds of the money come from our VA benefits in the federal government. And there is no crossover of that. The other thing, like I mentioned the point, and then I'll close. I mentioned, why can't I go into Rite Aid? I'm a Grumman Northrop retiree. If I want drugs, if I need them in a hurry, like I see him as a doctor right after this meeting, he says, you've got to have this prescription, he gives it to me. I go down to the drugstore, I take out my Grumman retiree card, and I get the drugs. It costs me $8. And I wait like 10, 15 minutes for him to prepare it. And I asked the director there, why can't we do that with the VA? He says, why don't you go up to the hospital? Because in a number of cases where the hospitals are, the veterans who need this medical care are too old to get in a car and unable, because of disability or whatever reason, to go up there. And when they go up there for a prescription, yeah, I can understand you wait 3 to 5 to 8 hours. But for a person who's disabled or aged, that's a long time, and they're not going to do it. So why can't they go in there, you see? It's good to mail after, that's excellent. But why can't I send my son with the card or my daughter and get that prescription? And that's the kind of things we should be dealing with. That first time, like for instance, what I have through my company, which uses Caremark, and I use Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois, which is what Grumman Northrop set up throughout the country. Basically, if I have a prescription and I need a month's supply right away, I go in there, I get that month's supply, it's the same $8. I then send out an overnight mail letter to Caremark, and they'll send me the 3 months supply for an additional $8. Now that's the kind of thing that a lot of veterans require. Now, the last thing I'm going to say is to those of you that have Veterans Pulse, because we in the JWB, and I'm not sure how the Vietnam veterans are, or the others are, only have a couple posts in Brooklyn that still have buildings. Basically, one of the things they asked for was to set up a program whereby the veterans posts would provide a reception center for outpatient care. And the reason for that, and they would provide the equipment, the doctors, the nurses, prescriptions, whatever we wanted, x-ray equipment, at no cost to the Veterans Poster Organization, and they would pay for any refurbishment, so it doesn't cost a dime. The reason for it is if Ralph is commander of a post, and he has this facility 2 days a week, he and his members are going to bring in a lot more veterans in to use that services than use Montrose or use Kingsbridge. And I would contact them because they're really eager. And the reason they're doing that, they get $300 a patient, regardless of how they service them. They used to get $500. They're taking a $30 million cut, regardless of what they're saying here. And it may be more. But right now, they think they can hold it to $30 million. The way they're going to overcome that is if they serve more in outpatient that don't have to come to the hospital, that $300 climbs. Plus the fact they do the job for less money. And that's where we come in. I thank you for inviting me. I appreciate. Sorry I didn't write the thing down. I got it in notes, but I am going to turn over to Ralph the veterans, our legislative priorities in there, which includes the Veterans Healthcare Authority and a number of other bills that are up now. And again, I thank you very much.
Mr. Weinstein, we thank you for this fine report. Last but not least, bear it in mind, and with all your patience, Mr. Christopher Dowdell of the Veterans Place on Long Island. Sir, you're welcome. Well, I'll repeat myself. Thank you for your patience.
D-E-L-L. I was originally scheduled to testify or give what we came up here for last month, and I thank you for your kindness in extending your ear to me, a veteran, because I think I have a prepared statement and I can give it to anybody who hasn't gotten it. I'm going to segue right into probably an ad lib. I hope I do well because I know time constraints.
Yes, we have
within 3 minutes. I'm going to give you what I see and what I have heard here today, and it'll be more on my shoulders than my board's shoulders because I'm going to speak from me. So this is Chris Dowdell's interpretation of what happened today. The bottom line is that the veterans that I see, which is a majority homeless or coming out disenfranchised from various systems, are not getting the health care at the level of need. They are getting a health care, okay, but certainly not at the need necessary. Bill asked, are veterans different? And I'm here to say yes. I work with them in the trenches. I'm there 16, 18 hours sometime. I go out and pull them off the streets. I try to engage them. I hear them, and then I can work with them. And they're not heard. I heard here today,